Welcome to another Into the West video. My name is Charles. With me today are Richard, Ian, and we have a special guest, Alex. Now, Alex is joining us from Alberta, Canada, and he is one of our patrons, and also he is experienced in the topic we have today, which is going to be talking about the fiefdoms, and we're going to be doing a tier list ranking all the heroes and warriors.
So, hello, everyone. I'm Alex. I started playing 2001, basically, when the movies came out and the models came out, and collected fiefdoms then. I still have a couple of the original sculpts just sitting over my display case right now from that first run of metal models. Organized some slow grow leagues here in Calgary to hopefully grow the game, and I've just been playing fiefdoms the whole time, so it's been a lot of fun. So I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. One more thing before we get started. We actually are also going to be doing a Dead of Dunharrow tier list, and that's going to be exclusively on Patreon. The theme is kind of like Gondor's allies, and that's why we decided to do these two armies. So if you want to watch that, make sure to head over to our Patreon page where you can see all our other perks as well. And also just thank you to all our patrons for supporting us. We really appreciate it. Before we continue with the video, I'm excited to announce our partnership with Baron of Dice. Baron of Dice is a company that sells a huge variety of dice for various game systems, including Middle-earth SVG. They're chunky and heavy as they are made of resin. They're also balanced, so you know that you're not cheating anyone. You can find the link to their website in the description below, and you can use the promo code WEST for 5% off. Also, keep an eye out on their website for custom Into the West dice coming soon. Go check them out.
Okay, let's dive right into the fiefdoms.
So we're starting with the GOAT.
Starting with Imrahil.
Big and man.
If you've seen our top good heroes bracket, Imrahil did pretty well in that one. Don't want to spoil where he ended up, but he's up there.
Yeah, I mean, his stat line speaks for itself, right? And that 12-inch banner is absolutely bonkers. Like, that's half the board usually in any game, especially from a cav base, which makes it even better. So, yeah, and I mean, I could go on and on about Imrahil forever. He's the GOAT, in my opinion.
Yeah. There's how many good heroes are there that are fight 6+ that 3 attacks with +1 to charge?
That aren't
there's
elves.
There's Gil-galad, Dane, Imrahil, and I guess Boromir if you put him with the lance, but like nobody does that. A lot of heroes, and he's
Elmhammerhand, Elendil,
Elisar.
Oh yeah,
I think what makes him one of the best good heroes in the game is not only is he a well-rounded combat hero, but he's also pretty cheap for what he is. And then he's also a great support hero. So not many heroes you can say have all three of those things.
And even though I'm a huge Imrahil fan, I'm going to dive into a couple things that I think kind of not suck for him, but he suffers from. The first is super susceptible to magic, right? He's only got the 3 will. And because he's such a high threat hero, it's very easy for evil to focus him with shatters on his lance or transfixes or compels. The other issue I think is there's a bit of a power creep issue with if you look at the Dragon Emperor specifically, they're about the same points level, bringing up same benefits, same bonuses to their armies. I just think the Dragon Emperor brings a little more. I think that power creep is kind of hurting Imrahil a little bit if you look at him from a competitive standpoint.
Don't compare it to the Dragon Emperor for anything. He's going to make anything look bad.
I mean, to be fair, though, the Dragon Emperor is in a faction that was kind of useless before those new profiles came out, right?
Absolutely,
the new hero profiles that make that work. This list works fine, like, already. And even if, like, without Imrahil, it's still an okay list. It's not great. Like, you want to take Imrahil. He is, like, the best thing in the list. But, like, it still works fine without him if you're doing, like, really low points.
No, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so I think we can all talk about how great Imrahil is and his like points cost. So I think definitely in a pure list, like he's an auto take, like no question. But I think one downside as well I would like to bring up is that when you start taking alliances, not just like yellow, like the green alliance that they have with Gondor and Rohan, he starts to become a good choice, but not an auto take. Like there's a lot of builds where you don't necessarily have to take them. Like, yeah, like if you take Boromir instead, or if you take a more Rohan heavy force. So he kind of just like makes like the pure fiefdoms really, really, really good. But yeah, I don't know as much in alliances.
I agree. I think, yeah, pure, he's a legend, in my opinion. It's impossible. He's top of legend too. Like it's impossible to unseat him from that. I think in an allied list though, I think he has a niche with Boromir with Banner, because then you can get fight six Men-at-Arms. But that's obviously a very specific list, right? You're paying the 220-point tax on Boromir, the 160-point tax on Imrahil. Like, it's not cheap. So I would say, yeah, in a pure list, he's top of legend. And in pure and allied, I would say bottom of legend, top of valor is kind of where I'd rank him.
I think he's still good, even if you don't have his buffs. I still think he's very well-costed. I would still put him in legend.
If you do it in like a Yellow Alliance, for example, and you don't get the 12-inch banner on everybody, and it's just the profiles mentioned, he's still a really good base profile overall. So I think he stays in legend no matter what. Like, if I had this profile in an elf list, I'd take it every time.
And then you bring Guards of the Gladrim Court for the fight six, but you're also then getting the banner on the Men-at-Arms right behind him, right? So I get, you know, I'm changing my opinion. He's top of legend regardless of Alliance. Yeah, thanks, Ian.
Cooked up a lot of lists with this guy. He's great.
Oh, he's unreal. Yeah.
Alex, you're giving away my secret recipe here with the Men-at-Arms comboing with the Guard of Gladrim Court.
I'll start speaking in French. Hopefully not everyone understands that one.
Next, we have Forlong the Fat.
If you don't mind, I'll start with this one. So I think Forlong, honestly, is the best hero in fiefdoms, hands down.
Boom! Hot take!
And I say that having absolutely loving Prince Imrahil, but I mean, How many men are strength five in the game, right? There's what, four of them on the good side? It's Elendil, Isildur, Forlong.
Every Rohan hero, though, with the army bonus.
On the charge.
On the turn, they charge.
But they don't have the plus one to wound. So, yes.
And
yeah, the combo is good.
But then he also gives permafaint to everyone within 6 inches. He's got his war horn as well. So he's 90 points. He's basically 60 points for a strength five with war spear on a horse. And then the extra 30 points is your war horn, plus 3 might, plus 3 wounds. And one of my favorite things to do, at least in our local, is his heroic strength. I use him to protect cavalry for anti-hurl. Because if you see an opponent lining up a hurl, you just call heroic strength. Even if you roll a 1, he's strength 6, and he's not getting knocked off, and he's protecting everyone behind him. And obviously, very niche moment to use that, but it saved my Imrahil on horse. It saved my 4 Knights of Dol Amroth on horse at least 2 or 3 times.
So, does it stops at him and he doesn't get dismounted, right?
Yeah, stops at him and he doesn't get dismounted. So, like, it's...
Ooh, that's crisp.
And he's got 3 might, right? So you're not feeling too bad about burning a point of might on it, depending on the circumstance.
I definitely think that he's really good value for what he brings. He doesn't even really need to give the Axeman the reroll ones. That's just, like, a bonus on top. But I will say, though, the fight 5 without strike, especially in today's meta, with, like you mentioned, the Dragon Emperor running around and a lot of elves, mostly due to the Dragon Emperor, so a lot of people are playing elves. It's just maybe because of the power creep of Fight 5 that he's supposed to be like a warrior cruncher, but when you come up against a Fight 5 army, you're kind of stuck because you want to be killing. And a lot of these armies can even bring Fight 6. And I think that's where he really struggles. But I agree, if he gets the right matchup, he is probably one of the best heroes.
One of my favorite things to do with him is you run him right next to Angbor or Imrahil and you strike with them and then you combat with Forlong, because then you get the fight 6 from Imrahil, you get the strike from both Imrahil and Angbor. So you're protecting Forlong that way. Now, granted, it is a lot of points in a very small area because you have to clump them up, but it is something that I've run to great success.
He's also just a good troop muncher. Mid-tier heroes like in Minas Tirith, they're typically like 2 wounds, 1 fate. He's tankier, and so a lot of the times your enemies won't target him because they'll want to go for the smaller heroes. So he can just stand on like the opposite side of the battle line and just kill troops with his lance every turn. So I can see value in that. And also the Warhorn's really good, especially with so many armies with terror and courage shenanigans and things like that. Also being a hero of valor means that you can ally him into yellow lists, which I've seen at big tournaments. It's a good option for many armies to include him as like a mid-tier hero. So I put him pretty solid in valor. I don't think he's quite at Imrahil's level, but then again, very few heroes are, in my opinion. So
I think he goes in legend.
I 100% agree.
He's so good. And I mean, I'm biased because like I have done that run list with him where he's just allied in, and he's just like the value he brings, the war horn makes like the rest of your army better. Like everything you guys have said previously, he's just such good value. And then also just the hitting power, like the strength 5 with the lance on the charge is so good for damage potential, and it does, like, a lot of lists don't have, like, Minas Tirith doesn't have that, it lacks it. If you go in yellow, allying him with, like, elves, he adds a lot of hitting power there, even with, like, bringing in the Axemen too, right? So, yeah, I think he goes into Legend for me. Just such good value. Maybe not as good as Emrahil, but he's still, like, just really, really solid. And also, he's the only other hero in the fiefdoms that has 3 might. So if you're doing a pure list, he's also almost always an auto-take just from that perspective alone.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you guys that I think he does get into Legend. I don't like putting him above Emrahil, though I think it's a good argument that, like, given his cost and his, like, alliance potential, you probably do see him more than Emrahil.
All right, let's move on to Angbor the Fearless.
I know this one is a little bit controversial. I've talked to people who hated this guy, and I've also talked to other people who I think share more of my opinion that he's actually, you know, pretty solid if you put the right composition beside him.
3 will on a 65 point hero, that's almost unheard of. And fearless, right? In my opinion, well-rounded profile for the fiefdoms list. Hard to dislike that for 65 points.
I really like this profile too, more so because of, like, the way he pairs with clansmen, because clansmen are an incredibly, like, points efficient profile. They're not great because they have to take the two-handed weapon is their really big downfall. The fact that they're only 8 points and that he's, like, pretty cheap and gives a banner, it's a cheeky way to ally in another banner effect into a separate list without really having to, like, pay the points for another banner. And again, I've toyed around with allying him into other elven lists and stuff like that, and it's all right. I think the biggest downfall for him is he does just have the broadsword, so he needs a lot of friends with him in combat.
So yeah, the perma two-hander is kind of, I like that they keep the 6s though, because then if you can natty into a 6, it's pretty fun. But
yeah, it's, I still think he's a fine profile. He's, like, he's a very solid profile, but, you know, and an extra strike. So in a pure fiefdoms list, you're going to end up taking him as well.
Yeah, I think he can be harder to use than Forlong because he has a strike, but he only has 2 might. And a lot of the times you want to save 1 might to maybe might up a dual roll, right? Because you know that he has that little handicap. And then also, you're also thinking about heroic moves. Like, if you don't want to use Imrahil's might on heroic moves, and then you've got to spare a point of might on that too. And being only 2 might, it's tricky sometimes knowing what to use your might on.
I think the D5 with the scenarios like Fog of War and Assassination, that really paints a target on your back. And he's like a hero you want to be, you know, chopping at your front lines, right? He's not just D5 and you can put him in the back. If you want value out of him, he's going to be put in danger, and he's only on foot.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Because of the two-handed weapon and being at D5 2 wounds, like, he is so vulnerable just to losing a fight and dying in to 2 warriors. So you need to have support, at least spear supports with him, if not other guys. And then it comes down to how you want to use his might points, because he only has 2. Like, him and Duin here suffer from the same problem of only having 2 might points, and they have a lot of things they want to do with those 2 might points.
I think if you're playing against Angbor in Fog of War, I think you pick him. No mind games or anything. You just pick him straight up, and then puts the opponent in a pickle where they either, like, just hide him in a corner, 65 points, like, down the drain, or it's almost a guarantee if you focus him, he's going to go down.
You soft, pal. You are soft.
The amount of times he's flubbed a roll for me against an Uruk-hai hero and just died to 3/4s. Like, it's just, well, that's the end of that. Like, it's also funny. I was telling Richard and Charles before the show, I had a tournament not too long ago where I ran Boromir, Imrahil, and Angbor. And Angbor outkilled Boromir and Imrahil combined the entire tournament. It was like Imrahil and Boromir were like 7 kills over the tournament, and Angbor was like 26. Like, it was just not even funny how effective he was. It was wild. It was an insane
tournament. Were they just fighting heroes? How did that happen?
Well, they just kept getting shut down by magic. And they just kept ignoring Angbor. And Angbor was like, okay, I'll just win this fight against a royal guard and chop him in half. It was unreal.
That is a fair point, actually, because he's such a low points cost and he still has 3 will. Most people just end up ignoring him for magic because they're just like, I don't want to waste resources transfixing this, like, silly little guy when I have these other threats to deal with. That's kind of funny. But yeah, I definitely see that. That makes sense.
I'm kind of torn here a little bit. Like, I think we all like this profile, even with his, like, given weaknesses. Like, I want to put him in Valor, but I don't know if he gets there.
I think because Forlong is just so close in points to him, like, it's only a 15 point difference. I think he's honestly a fortitude And I say that as someone who plays Angborn every fiefdoms list I bring. Like, my first three heroes are always Imrahil, Forlong, Angborn.
To me, he's definitely a Valor. I think when you're comparing courage utility buffs, like, I would take Angborn's Fearless Bubble over Forlong's Warhorn. I know you don't take Forlong just for his Warhorn, but I would prefer to have just a straight up Fearless Bubble. And I think 15 warband slots at only 65 points, he's one of the cheapest Valors in the game. You can slot him into a list. Let's say you want to take Minas Tirith without any bodyguard, and he can bring the Fearless and he can bring the hitting power, or another list that has lower courage. So I think in an allied list, I've definitely considered him a lot in a lot of yellow lists.
I'm doing the same thing as you guys. I'm flip-flopping back and forth. I don't know.
I have decided that.
So I was leading towards Fortitude, but like top of Fortitude, because like, yes, the Fearless Bubble is really good. But again, if we compare him to Forlong, sure, the Warhorn isn't nearly as good, but the Warhorn isn't really why you're taking Forlong. You have a courage buff anyway. And your troops are already courage 4 if you're taking the Knights, right? So I think the Fearless Bubble is good, but he kind of comes more into play maybe as an ally. So I think Fortitude. Like, if you are going to take another Striker, I feel like you'd probably jump into Minas Tirith and grab Hurin instead, because then you can bodyguard whoever your leader is.
And Hurin has a horse.
And the mounted, and then the two-handed weapon without the penalty. I think, yeah, I think I've talked myself into putting him into Fortitude.
Maybe the most meme potential in this list with the spending the point of might and then boosting the Black Root Veil Archers into Arrows of Death.
Something else Dwinhir does that people always forget about that I think he's amazing for is heroic defense. He's your only source of heroic defense in the fiefdoms. And the amount of times that I've seen flying Nazgul or Gulivar try to go for your backline, and you're like, oh, I'll charge him with Dwinhir, who's fearless from Angbor or higher courage from Forlong. And Gulivar's like, okay, heroic combat. And you're like, you have that? And it's like, yes, I do. For two more turns.
Yeah, I really like his profile. It sucks that he only has two might, because you want his might points so you can call those, the heroic shoots, so you can get the bonus on troops. But you also want to keep his might so you can boost wound rolls against monsters and stuff, because then he can do D3 wounds. So you want him to be trying to wound them. But then he also has heroic defense, so you want him to be able to stall out enemy heroes. So I'm always torn whenever I run him how to spend his might. It is just a really great profile. And I know, Charles, you made this comparison before, like with the shooting buff, that it's not as good as the Harad one, because the Harad one is spent with a will point and this one's a might point. However, the Harad one is a will point on troops that hit on a 4+. This one is a might point, but it's to troops that hit on a 3+, rerolling once. So also, most of them hit.
It also doesn't have to be Dwinhir's might point that does it. If you have a might caddy like Aragorn, you can just call your free heroic accuracy every turn.
Yeah, I think that's more when we get to the Black Root Veil Archers.
Yes.
I mean, flat out, he just always rerolled failed wound rolls, and then he does D3 to monsters. So
he's got Bane of King's Ranged.
Mooning.
So
yeah, it's kind of sick.
So I think that the heroic shoot maneuver can sometimes be a trap, because as like easy as it is for this army to get warband slots, it's not like a particularly high might army. Because a few of their heroes have two might. You're not like Minas Tirith or Mordor, where you're going to have a ton of might. And so by the time your enemy comes to you and you're in combat, sometimes you'll find yourself lacking might and having less resources than your enemy. So for me, this is an easy ranking. I know that Ian, for example, values him quite a bit more than me. But for me, I would always take the three heroes that we've already talked about first before I pick him. So I would only take him at like 800 to 1,000 points. Just because I value the other three more. And so to me, it wouldn't be higher than Angbor, but I can understand people who like to build the shooting style of fiefdoms to, I can understand how he's an auto take in those kind of builds.
I actually totally agree with you, Charles. Like, I don't think you end up taking him
in a shocking turn of events.
Maybe, so you grab Forlong and Imrahil first, probably. And then maybe depending on the build, if you can only afford one of them, you might go for him instead of Angbor. But I still think most of the time you end up going Angbor or like a captain instead if you want the march. So, yeah, he probably ends up sitting in Fortitude for me just under Angbor. But I just don't want to understate. I do think he is like a quite good and capable hero, but I don't think he's like great, amazing or anything, right? I think
he's fine. So, and yes, 60 points for 15 warband slots is incredible. Like, you're almost getting into like Denethor levels of incredible for warband slots to point cost. But yeah, I think he's very much pigeonholed into a very specific style of build, unfortunately. Yeah, so I would say, yeah, Fortitude below Angbor is where I would put him.
Now, I haven't done this yet, but I have considered, you know, I've seen him run maybe with like Madrill allied in for some cheap 3 might to do that. I don't know if that's the greatest build or not, but I've always considered running like gambling with like Aldor or somebody with him. And then you just kind of like sit them back and you're like your gun line and just do the auto shoot every time. And then you're keeping doing here's might for other things. But, you know, then you're investing a lot of points just to get this one trick off. Is it worth it? I don't know. But then also, you know, the might thing is good else time, other times. So I don't know. I think there's ways you could do it. You could throw Alisar in there with him or something crazy. I don't know.
That's the most Ian army I've ever heard. You might as well throw in a couple King's Huntsmen,
yeah.
Right?
Pew, 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 pew. Hell yeah, brother. Get it. I've honestly considered like running a list with just shooting heroes just for the memes, but I have never had the courage to do it.
So I want to leave something with you here. So a friend of mine here in Calgary raised this point with me, and Rhett, you're welcome for bringing this up. He's toying with the idea of running Blackroot Vale archers as his front line and like going mass Blackroot Vale as a twin here. And then you're using them as almost a meat shield to eat charges, get your bow shots out. Cause they're 8 points each, right? Like they're not expensive, but they're not cheap either. But it's an idea he's been toying with. And initially I was like, okay, what a stupid idea that is, right? Clans are the same points and you get the two-hander. But the more I think about it, the more I'm like, you know, like it honestly feels almost like an elf list where your front line is the bows, back line's the higher fight with spears and shields. And all of a sudden after attrition wears down, your opponent's lost their front line, but now your real front line is still like, you know what I mean? It's an intriguing list that he's mentioned to me, and it's got me thinking now.
So strategically, before I've done this with this list, is where you put all the archers in the center, and people go after them after you call like a heroic shoot, and like they lose 5 models. They go, oh shit, I gotta kill those archers. So if you set them up in the center, and then you set your like your clansmen or whoever two-handed guys on the sides with your heroes that are mounted, it's very easy to do like the bullhorns technique because people, they run into the center. They want to kill those archers and their defense force. So they're like, yeah, I'm going to kill them. And then you just boop, completely surround them and your guys on the sides just wipe them out. So it's doable. It's great.
Yeah.
So next up we have the typical captain, but I guess in this list, he has a little bit of a boost. Not only does he have some of the bonuses from the heroes, but Imrahil also gives him fight 6 around him. There's only a few select captains that can reach that level. So, and then you can put him on mount and lance as well. So he might be better than your usual captain.
Yeah. Plus he's the only one in the list with Heroic March. Though you can get a lot of marches from your 2 green armies, Minas Tirith and Rohan. So maybe that utility isn't as valuable in this list, but if you want a mounted option and don't want to take 4 long, or you're already taking 4 long, then this is it.
I would say in a pure fiefdoms list, I would say he's a valor, if not maybe bottom of legend, because if you're bringing pure fiefdoms, you probably have all the named heroes first, and the generic Captain Dol Amroth with all the buffs the fiefdoms heroes give him, like you have a fight 6, strength 4 plus 1 to wound on the charge, rerolling ones, fearless, defense 7, 2 might points, heroic march, and the model, let's be real, the model is so sick. The old school model with the lance straight up, like he's an amazing generic captain when you have all the other named heroes ahead of him, because the buffs they give him are just phenomenal. Like he's very hard to beat.
I would actually argue, to make your point further, that in a pure fiefdoms, maybe you even take him before Angbor and Dunhir.
I would definitely take him before Dunhir, but I don't think I would take him before Angbor, because like as Charles alluded to, that fearless bubble is really good.
Because of his buffs, I don't think it hurts you to take him, even if he's not adding a lot of utility to your list. And so I think bottom of Fortitude might be a good spot, because you can get March elsewhere by allying. But if you do take him, it's not like he's a bad pick because of the buffs. I think that's where
I mean, so buffs aside, he's still like a great base profile. Like,
yeah,
fight 5 with the lance, possibly fight 6, you know, D7. Love that base profile, but he pays the points for it, right? Like 85 points when he's fully kitted out is a reasonable cost. It's fine, but it's not really efficient. And then when you can ally into like Minas Tirith, grab a 3 might hero like Madrill, who has March as well, or you can go into Rohan and grab somebody else if you want somebody mounted with March. he kind of gets left along the wayside just because he only has the two might. The potential for fight six is nice, but like you don't really need it. And then you're concentrating a lot of points in one area to get that. He's still great though, but I think it's just because he only has the two might. He gets left behind.
One of the things I do love with him having that fight six near Imrahil though, is you can commit him to enemy heroes to burn their might on strikes before you commit Imrahil, because then they have to strike up to outfight him. The two things that I think aren't going well for him, the first is in this list with the other heroes, he's only Fortitude. So he's only bringing 12 Warband slots, not 15. He's also more expensive than Forlong, and we've already discussed how good Forlong is. The other major issue is he's only Courage 4 base, which is not really good. So like, yes, with the Fearless, with the plus one Courage, you kind of mitigate that, but just Courage 4 base, it's tough. Like I'd put him probably below Angbor, above Dwin here, but I would keep him in the Fortitude.
I kind of agree with Alex that like he serves a similar role. He reminds me of the captain, the Palace Guard captain in Halls of Thranduil. You do have to stick him close to the main hero, but I can kind of see a case where in like a low 500, 550 points kind of thing, where maybe you don't go Forlong, even though Forlong is better. And then you could go like Imrahil with the captain, and then you just try to roll straight through the enemy army, like right down the middle. I think there's some potential here. I always love Bounty Hero, so I think he edges out Dune here. I don't know, Ian.
I think Dune here kind of goes in instead because of the heroic defense potential.
I think we're like, tied here. Ian and I say behind, and then you and Alex say in front.
Yeah, because again, like there's just an other ways to get march in that are cheaper, and you don't really need another hitting hero in the list, right? When you have Imrahil and Forlong and all those two-handed weapons and stuff on foot, like you don't need a third one.
That's a very good point.
Like again, maybe in like low, like smaller points, you go Imrahil and him. I really wish he was 80 points instead of 85 fully kitted out, by the way, because then you could run him, three of them, and Imrahil at 400 points, and that'd be so nice.
Like Mahud Kings all over again.
Yeah, it'd be great.
I honestly don't think you take him for the march. The fact that he comes with it is nice, but I honestly think you take him for that fight six heroic combat, or that fight six heroic combat with a striking Angbor or a striking Imrahil.
You swayed me.
Oh, sorry, Ian.
Okay, now we're on to the warriors. To kick off the warriors, we have the men-at-arms of Dol Amroth.
I would say these guys probably aren't the most efficient, but a pike is a pike.
It's a hot take.
You are wrong!
Well, just looking at points wise, like you're paying the points for his stats, but you know, they fill a role that not many armies can.
I'm going to start the ball rolling and say they're legends within the fiefdoms list, within like understanding that outside the fiefdoms, they're a little expensive. But when you look at the different warrior models or warrior profiles, as we're going to discuss here, when you look at their points cost relative to everyone else, I think they're a legend, right? They're your most efficient way of getting pikes. They're fight five near Imrahil. And if you bring Boromir as an ally, they're fight six, which is insane. And then on top of that, right, you again have your rerolling ones to wound. You have your Fearless. You have the 12-inch banner, right? You can throw a pike. Like if you stack two pikes deep and throw your clansman on someone, you could effectively get like a 14-inch banner on that combat, if not further, because your back pike just has to be the only one in range of that 12-inch banner. And so you can extend that banner range from Imrahil even further by using these guys. So I would honestly say, now if they're not in a pure fiefdoms list, I would say they're probably Valor Fortitude based on their points, but pure, I would say legend all day.
Yeah, they do depend a lot on the buffs in the army, because I'm just comparing them to like an Isengard pikeman, which I think is 1 point more, and then they get one more strength instead of, oh, they have the same courage, so I suppose they're fairly costed if you're not paying for the buff near Imrahil. So I think it's because of the army that's giving them so many buffs that's what makes them really good. So it's kind of hard to say where I would put them. I think Valor is pretty solid. I don't know about legend, because I know Richard's allied them in like a warband into Lothlorien before, but outside of that, how often would you say, okay, I'm just going to drop 10 of these guys or a warband of these guys into a yellow list, because you're not even going to get the buffs, right? We're going to talk about the Axemen next, but they have a very similar profile to the Axemen. And I think out of the two, I would rather stack up on on pikemen than axemen.
The direct comparison is to the axemen, right? Because they're the two main supporting troops you're going to put like behind your line or doing something else. I overall prefer the utility of the axemen because they can support or they can go up in the front and like two-handed and pierce. I just think that utility is much better than being able to stack up your pikes deep, right? Because they don't have a special rule to avoid, you know, the pike formation thing, right? So if you're going to stack them up deep, you're going to lose your front rank. You have to be ready for that. And yes, they are great with Imrahil because they can get up to fight five in a little bubble. But, you know, I think in all fiefdom lists, you're going to take a mix of them. I would usually go heavier into the axemen, I think, if I could, depending on the build. And definitely if I was going to ally, I'd probably jump to the axemen first because of the utility. They still are very good troops. And I think quite well costed. And then once you stack them next to Imrahil, they're great. I don't know if I'd put them in legend. I think Valor is fine for them though.
The one thing that I really dislike about them, and this is more if you're not taking Imrahil and you're in a yellow alliance, is if you swap a banner on one of them for that D5 banner, they lose the pike, right? It's not like they keep a spear. It says replace pike with banner, right? So if you aren't running Angbor, if you're not running Imrahil, you're effectively, like, you have to take the banner on a Blackroot Veil Archer because it's the only way to keep your main weapon, because otherwise you're dropping the pike for a banner or the axe for a banner. And we could obviously, that ties into the next warrior model, the axeman, but that's a huge negative for me. Is,
well, typically if you're allying, you can just put a banner in another army that you're allying with. But so I think that's a very corner case. I think overall it's a solid profile with not very many weaknesses other than the ones that are shared by pike warriors in general.
I still think legend, but you've convinced me for Valor.
All right.
You could slot them in either one, I think. I mean, same for Axemen, spoilers. But
let's move on to the Axemen of Lossarnet.
Very, very close to the Men-at-Arms. I think I'm with Ian here. I think they just edge out the Men-at-Arms for me. But very, very similar. I usually, whether in Alliance or Peer, I would always just take a mix of both.
My favorite way to run fiefdoms, if you are going to do a pike block, though, is to put the Axemen up front and then have two lines of pikes behind, and the axemen just two-handed pierce in every fight. And you accept that you're probably going to lose them if you lose the fight, but you usually don't lose the fight. And then usually when you're rolling to wound, you're wounding something on fours with them, with like rerolling ones with four lungs. So yeah, these guys are great. They're great for damage. They're just great for versatility. I love them.
So one of the ways I play them is I don't really use axemen and clansmen as my front line. To my own detriment, the Forge World Knights of Dol Amroth models, which I'll talk about when we get to them, but I think they're the most beautiful models ever made. The poses are so dynamic and so nice, but I love bringing them, and I digress. So one of the ways I play my Axemen and my Clansmen is that I use them almost as like linebackers, or for the rugby fans of ours, like wingers, fullbacks. Like, I don't actually commit them for the first little bit, right? I let my knights eat charges, and then my axemen come in when I can get trapped and other things. You use them almost as a rover in the backfield. I would honestly, yeah, as Ian said in the last one, I think they're interchangeable as Men-at-Arms. They're the same points cost. They feel roughly the same utility. I love the axe and spear option, right? You don't have to two-hand.
Yeah, they bring good utility to both of their green allies because Minas Tirith has trouble wounding and Rohan doesn't have spear support. So they kind of make both of those battle lines better. I can get behind the top of Valor. All right, next we have the Clansmen of Lamadon.
These guys are straight Chads.
I was going to say, they're the only model that wears kilts in the game. So very obviously top of legend for that fact alone. Yeah, I mean, Courage 5, Broadsword, Chad kilt wearers, right? Fight 4. And you, again, use them as rovers, use them as a front line, like 8 points for what they bring. And you just juice them up more with the fiefdom's special rules. Like, they're unreal for the points they cost.
They're honestly, like, so underpointed if you calculate their points cost next to, like, a man of Rohan. But because they have the two-handed weapon, it balances it all out. That's why bad two-handed weapons are GW.
And they have a good two-handed weapon.
Yeah, still like six. I mean, these guys are also great. I don't think they're legend great, but like in any list, you're always going to take some of them because of like the Fearless Bubble or just like the base Courage 5 anyway, and because they're so cheap.
I find that not only do they keep the six, but also when you're playing fiefdoms, most likely you're going to be fighting under Imrahil's banner or Angvor's banner. So it's like you get two tries to get that six. And when you get the six, it's not modified down to a five. So much better than a regular two-handed weapon. And it should at least be the top of Valor. I know Richard was hovering over Legend. I don't know. Do you guys think deserves Legend?
So these guys, sure. These guys are phenomenal. Don't get me wrong. And I think they go really well. Like if you run them with Angbar as like a flanking force away from Imrahil, you have a banner effect over on that side of the board as well, which is great. I don't think they're better than the other named troops overall. If they slot somewhere in the middle of them, sure. Or like, I still think they're phenomenal, but I don't
think
they're
always going to want some for their courage five, right? Like they're not exactly fearless, but they're, even if they don't get the fearless bubble, it's effectively you're going to pass most of the time.
It's actually funny you say that because they're kind of the reason I think Angbar is a little bit less useful, because if you have a couple of these guys with Forlong in the list, they're courage six, and like you don't really need a fearless bubble at that point.
Oh yeah, they should be above Angbar. I'm not arguing that.
No. I just meant like in general, like it's kind of funny how they nullify him being in the list at all. Are they above the other two troops though?
I just feel like the competitive way you write them is you want the numbers, right? And you want to, like, maybe at 800 points, get into high 40s, 50s. And I think it's because of these guys. Because if you only have the previous two warrior profiles, I'm not sure you would get, like, quite there.
One thing to touch on, too, that Ian brought up is for points, cost, and efficiency, and you run them as almost like a death ball of bees with two-handed broadswords, is that if you're allying in, you can bring Angbor and 15 of these guys for what, 185 points or something like that. I mean, the kilt alone is worth at least above the men-at-arms. I could see the argument for the axemen being higher, and I think I would agree with that.
I think they're all very, very close and all very, very good. So
splitting hairs here. Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it, Richard. Like they're all great profiles. I mean, if you guys want to put them in legend, I'm not going to complain. Like I still love this profile and I love the way that works. So I'm totally fine with that.
Top of Valor.
Yeah, I could see Top of Valor.
All right, let's get to the Blackroot Veil Archers. We also touched a little bit on these guys before when we talked about doing here.
Yeah, so 3+ shoot value and rerolling, was it failed in the ways if they don't move or failed to hits if they don't move?
They reroll ones to hit.
Is that what it is? Reroll ones if they don't move?
Okay. With if they do not move and they're within 6 of doing here. Like, so that's a Duinir special rule. But then they have their special rule is the rerolling from heroic shoots, which is
that's
great.
That's what it is. Yeah. So yeah, you're rerolling, you're hitting on a 3+, rerolling once. That's what, a 80% chance to hit on a reroll or something like that? Like that's absolutely bonkers. If you roll well enough, you can absolutely just mince a troll or a fell beast in one go, or a Gulivar. I would actually say if you want to counter Gulivar, these are the archers to do it. You bring Duinir and them and you're like, okay, come at me, bro. Like,
well, now that they don't have, he doesn't have a bunch of in the ways for troops. Yeah.
That's not a bad shout out.
You can run, but you can't hide.
So they are only fight 3 and courage 2, though, for 8 points. This is like the only unit in the list where it's like they're not like really well pointed or like really good value. Like they're not bad. They're just kind of fine. But again, it also comes down to the thing where if you want to bulk out your numbers, and the shooting that they have is really good if you bring Duin here or not.
Their shooting is excellent, but they're kind of bad at everything else. Like, you use them to grab objectives, and then if you break, they run away. You use them to fight, and if they're not supported by another type of troop, they're fight 3, defense 4. So you kind of have to be careful with them. And another thing is if you're not playing a pure fiefdoms list, because of how bow limits work, it cuts down on how many of these guys you can take. So you won't be able to do what Alex said, take like a warband of 15 of them if you're doing like half Minas Tirith. They're not as effective if you don't mass like spam Blackroot Veil Archers.
One of the things they're really good for, and Ian touched on it earlier with that weak center formation, and I said I would talk about this when we got to them. I really like using them once you've identified. So you look, when you show up at a table, right, you look at the board, you go, okay, I want the fight to happen in this choke point, right? Whether it's a hill or house or whatever. I want the fight to happen here because it benefits me for XYZ reasons. I love putting these guys in a position where your opponent goes, I don't want to deal with that. I'm going to go this way. And they basically walk right into the position you want them to be in. You're like, cool, thank you for coming over to my house. Now I'm going to kick you out. I really enjoy using them for that. You don't need to bring 15 of them for that. Right, you only need 5 to 7 at most if you really want to do it that way, and then you can max out the rest of his warband with axemen and clansmen or knights.
They definitely take fiefdoms to an above average shooting army, but I also agree with Charles that they are quite one dimensional. So
that's all you got.
I think you're definitely going to see them, and they're not a bad warrior to take. But we can all probably agree that they're not as good as the other warriors in the army.
They need Duinir. Right. If you don't bring Duinir here, they're just not worth it, in my opinion. And for me, that means a minor ranking for them. Ooh. But if they're with Dwin here, I could hear an argument for top of Valor for what they bring with Dwin here and those abilities. And that's where I think it comes in, right? As honesty bows, they're a little expensive. Bottom of Fortitude, top of Minor is honestly where, and I say that again, being a huge fiefdoms enjoyer and loving the models, like it's.
I'm surprised. I thought that you would put them higher than all of us, but.
Oh, I want to. Don't get me wrong. I want to.
I mean, I'm still biased, but I still think you max out your bows every time with this list. Like, it's a good archer profile, you know.
But Ian, if you were trying to do a half fiefdoms, half Minas Tirith, I think you would lean towards Rangers of Gondor. There's just a much better profile for about the same points.
Yeah. But you still, in that alliance, I think you still take your 33% black root that you can, because they still get the banner bonus from Imrahil on a pure list, right? They still benefit from all of those buffs in combat. I don't think they're better than any of the other troops in the list. I don't think they're in minor either. I put them somewhere in Fortitude.
Yeah, I would be okay with right in front of Dwin here, because you can take armies with Black Root Veil archers, but not Dwin here. But then you probably don't want to take Dwin here with no Black Root Veil archers.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree. Like I said, bottom of Fortitude, top of Minor. The two of them together, I would say, is high Valor easily if you could rank the two of them in one go.
All right. Our final profile is the Swan Knight of Dol-Amroth.
One of the best looking models.
There was a lot of hate for them when they first came out.
Nobody mentioned Black Numenoreans. Oops.
Or Guards of the Fountain Court. I honestly think you have to look at them almost at mounted and foot as separate profiles, because I think they fulfill vastly different roles, because the foot profile is the only way to get shielding in this list, which is nice, but it's also your pigeonholed into an 11-point model that isn't as points efficient as the rest, right? So I think Mounted Knights Dol-Amroth with all the heroes are some of the best mounted models in the game. Right, again, 12-inch banner, fight 5, re-rolling ones to wound, plus 1 to wound on the charge, potentially fearless, and they're also 20 points each on horse, which is extremely expensive. I think they're the most expensive cav unit in the game, aren't they?
Iron Hills are the same points cost, and then Rivendell Knights are 22 points.
Oh, I forgot about the Riv Knights. Yes, you're right. So sorry, they're up there. They're one of the most expensive cavalry models in the game, and I think they need that hero tax to really work for them.
Yeah, I think you've already touched upon the foot model not being efficient. The cavalry model is also as well, to a certain extent, because you are paying for the armor on the horse. You're paying 8 points for the horse, which is personally, I don't think it's worth it, but they are your only cav option, right? And also, if you think of an alliance list in Minas Tirith, the Knight of Minas Tirith, while it's good, it's a different type of unit. This is like your heavy cavalry. It fulfills a different role. I definitely think that they are much better on horse, and you'll want a few of them in a list, but I think they're rarely so good that you're going to want to spam them.
Right. It's a high enough fight warrior that a lot of opponents' heroes will have to strike to beat them, which is great for you, because then you're trading might off a hero for a warrior. And then the next turn, you're like, hey, here's Imrahil, deal with him. Yeah, and like I said, with all the buffs, they're awesome. If you kill the horse and dismount them, well, then you have a D6 shielding fight 5 warrior, or fight 4, sorry, up to fight 5 warrior in your midst that you don't have to deal with as well. On foot, I mean, to begin with, as I said earlier, the models are beautiful. Those Forge World sculpts, oh,
so good.
Such nice models. And again, though, the issue is they're 11 points. And for 9 points, you can get an Axeman, right? For 8 points, you can get a Clansman. I mean, I personally always take a few foot knights because, again, I love the models, but it's so hard to justify taking an 11-point foot knight.
I think for this case, we should just focus more on the mounted, because I think, like, I respect you taking it as, like, a thematic choice, but most of the time, it's not good enough. Yeah.
I would put them at the top of Fortitude, because I know they're similar in role to, like, Iron Hills Goat Rider, but Iron Hills is more of an elite army with lower model count, where mobility, you rely on the Goat Rider for mobility more. Fiefdoms is at least average. It's above average, I would say, model count. So you're going to have spare models to cover objectives and control the board. So I see the knights as less of a role for mobility. You take them more for the hitting power.
But, like, you're not lacking in hitting power with your heroes exactly. And your troops,
that's
right?
Why,
like,
I'm saying Fortitude. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like because their points cost is so heavy, if you want to bulk out on them, it destroys your numbers, right? Like, one of these guys is like 2.5 Clansmen. That's crazy, right? Your numbers just get chopped down so much. So I think in most lists you're gonna take a couple of them, but like, are you gonna, unless you're going heavy into like that cavalry build with like a bunch of them and then a bunch of pikes, like, I don't know, do you take a lot of them? I personally only take like two or three. Like, I treat them like other cav.
I basically take two per mounted hero, so four at most, because you're running Imrahil and four long, and then if you have the captain, then six, because then I usually use them just to run as a little triangle.
I mean,
but even then, like,
if you go for like between four and six of them, then you probably don't need the captain because you have enough mobility from them. Yeah. But I mean, would you rather have four knights or a captain? It's the same points cost, and the captain brings you two more points of might.
I mean, fight five cavalry is very nice, though. I will say
it
that
is really good. And then they'll have the banner effect too, right? So they are very good shock cavalry.
I think around the captain for me.
Yeah, I would say below Angbor, above the captain is where I would put
them. Yeah, I'd probably take a squad of them before I take a captain. Does he go above Angbor?
I mean, I usually take two knights before I take Angbor, because I'm starting with Imrahil.
But then in an alliance, sometimes you would take Angbor, but you wouldn't take the knights if the allying faction has better cavalry, right?
Yeah, you're only going to take them if you have Imrahil, because that's the only time they become worth it, their points cost, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And then what? Where do the foot knights go? Do they go in minor or independent?
We don't talk about them.
It kills me to say, but I honestly would probably say minor. It kills me to say it, because I love the models so much, but they're so rough.
Yeah,
I'd probably put them in minor, because they're still a solid profile. They're just overcosted. With the allies, they don't serve a purpose.
Because you get the same effect from a warrior of Minas Tirith with shield, essentially.
You can get the fight five anyway from the pikemen, so...
Yeah, they don't wear kilts, so, I mean, kind of sucks.
All right, so this has been our fiefdoms tier list. Please let us know in the comments what you think. Thank you all for watching, and thanks to Alex for joining us on this tier list. Look forward to the next episode of Into the West.